Welcome back to the Unanimous Decision Podcast. I am your host, D-Palm. Follow me on Twitter at D-Palm66. Follow the show on Twitter at UDPod. Follow the entire MTR network at, you guessed it, the MTR network. You found us, don't lose us. Subscribe in the iTunes store. Subscribe on Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcasts for absolutely free 99. That's where we can be found. Leave those 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you leave a 5-star review, not only will I see it, not only will it help the show, but it will be read on the air. I've had to say some very unkind things about things and people that I've loved on this podcast because of my dedication to the 5-star life. We're going to take a quick peek right now. It's been a while since we've got a new one, and still no new ones up there. Guys, let us know someone's listening. I can see the numbers. I know someone's listening. Do me a huge favor. Go to iTunes. Leave that 5-star review. You don't even have to write anything. If you do write something, I guarantee I'll read it on the air. If you don't write anything, I won't read it on the air, but I will be very appreciative. And it warms my heart. It warms the podcaster's heart. And not just my show. Every show on the MTR Network. Hell, every show that you invite into your ear holes over the course of a week, a day, a month, a year, drop them that quick 5 stars if they deserve it, and let them know that someone's listening. It's always an uplifting thing to uplift someone that's creative. And so I come to you now. It's Tuesday. It's May 14th. It is both draft lottery night and the kickoff of the NBA Conference Finals. So I figured we got to get in the booth. We got to get something out for the people. So here it is, your officially unofficial UD Pod presented pregame, pre-draft lottery show. And I look through my notes for the week and I say, a lot happened last week. Can we just do NBA? Let's do some Gwens really quickly. Urban Meyer, his biggest mistake, Zach Smith was arrested again. In case you forgot, Zach Smith was the former wide receivers coach at Florida who was found to have been beating his wife at Florida. Because Urban Meyer is just that loyal of a guy, he brought him with him to Ohio State where he then continued to, spoiler alert, beat his wife. He's now been separated. A lot of stuff happened this fall. We covered it on the podcast. He was arrested last week for violating the protective order by trying to pick up his kids from school. And my reply to this is, okay, cool, hook him. The Boston Red Sox continued to do stupid things and did not heed any of the warnings that we so helpfully gave out last week, in case you missed it. Nada from Up Rocks and I went through and explained to the Red Sox in very plain language why attending the ring ceremony at the White House in this climate, when your manager and your MVP will both be abstaining, was probably a bad idea. Well, they rolled forward with it. The White Sox went to the White House. And in all the speaking from Boston side, from the White House side, no one once mentioned the best player will fucking do. Now, I say the White Sox because that was the most of the delegation, and also because they were there to meet a white supremacist. What white supremacist, you may ask? Glad you asked. The white supremacist who last week was announced to have stolen the ball from a younger man to claim that he was the 2018 co-champion of a golf course he owns in Florida. Google that man's name. Google golf course in Florida. Google champion, and you'll see the results of that story. But like I said, it is lottery night. It is conference finals kickoff night. I'm talking ball. I got no guests, so you guys are stuck with me for however long I decide to talk. I've got a list of stuff I want to cover, but the list starts with the draft lottery, and a lot of people are making a lot of hay over who's going to get Zion. Who is going to get this freak of nature that could flame out in 5 to 7 years? Because we've never seen a body self like this do the things that he's going to be doing on a basketball court. Hell, doing the things that we've seen him do on a basketball court. It doesn't make sense. It kind of breaks your brain. And Mina Kimes had an amazing story up on the internet last week about this. She went down to rural South Carolina. And I love the fact that when Bomani talked to her about this on his podcast, he was able to point out that saying rural South Carolina, I'm talking about. Now, she went down there. She saw the small school he went to. She saw the tiny white people he used to beat up on in high school. And she saw the reason why going into the season, he was not the consensus number one. No one knew if what he was doing against the Lollipop Guild would translate against top level talent. End of the story. It fucking translated. When he was out of the tournament, the ratings fell. He was the most exciting thing in college basketball, possibly the most singular exciting force in college basketball since the Kevin Durant, Greg Oden year, and that took two guys to get us there. RJ Barrett was supposed to be the number one pick, and we've largely forgotten about him due to the power of Zion Williamson. So The question now is, Tuesday, D-Palm, who do you think is going to win the draft lottery? And if I were a cynic, which I fucking am, I would tell you that the fix is in. He's going to the Knicks. If I was a realist, which I'm... I would say the fix is in and he's going to the Knicks. If I cared about the city I lived in, I would tell you that he's coming to the Hawks, that a young core of Trae Young and Zion Williamson and that kid from Florida whose name I forget but can shoot pretty good... I would think that that'd be a core you can build around. You can have an exciting team in the East, exciting team in what's become Black Hollywood, Hollywood South, if you will, until this draconian abortion law passes, and they all leave and we end up with a lot less tax base. Anyway, that's another podcast for another time. What I will say this is this. If he were to end up on the Hawks, and he's not going to, the Hawks, I believe, have a 10% chance of falling in the top spot, and then they have an increasingly smaller chance of capturing that Mavericks pick where they could have two lottery picks due to the Doncic trade last year. It won't hit. Let me just say that right now. It's not going to hit. But if it did, the Hawks become a destination. Atlanta Hawks games become a destination for something beyond the visiting squad. And I haven't been to a Hawks game since the year we won the East. I went to the Eastern Conference Finals and watched us get mollywopped by the Cavs. But I'll say this. I'm going next year. I'll tell you that right now. I've got friends who've acquired season tickets, and I'll be acquiring their tickets because, hey, I'm much smarter than them. I'll trick them into giving them to me. They don't listen to this podcast and don't share it with them if they do. But also saying that is that just look, we've got all this new money, all this outside money, all this temporary visitor money that comes to the city. If we had something when they're shooting these movies in the winter that they can go do and get a piece and get a taste of Atlanta and kind of make Hawks games a thing to be seen at Phillips, I think, no wait, State Farm Arena, I believe it's called now, that'd be something to see, man. I haven't seen the Hawks be really, even when they won the East that year, numerically, not actually in the playoffs, it's been kind of pulling teeth to get you to go to a Hawks game, you know? This team... This is a city that we've proven around some sports with some demographics we'll circle the wagons for, and I think basketball could be one of them. I think the NBA could be one of them. I think Zion and Trey could do a very good job of selling us that here. Now, I should be using this to segue from the lottery to the conference finals. But there's a bigger story than either one of these stories happening right now, and that is the exposure of the systematic incompetence of the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I know what you're saying. Wait, D-Palm, we're all of a certain age. We all know that the Lakers are one of those teams that just, you know, they're just a perennial powerhouse in the league. Maybe. Maybe before 2018-2019 season. And honestly, if you take a long enough look, it doesn't even hold up there, to be perfectly and real honest. But let's say before this season that they were a well-run organization. Not true, but let's play that way. Now, it's interesting because things went left, obviously, for the Lakers this year. I was drafted into not Lakers fandom, but like being aligned with those people. Not because I like the colors purple and gold. I think they're fucking hideous. I do, however, cheer for LeBron James. And I thought that, like LeBron, he also agreed. He thought that going there would facilitate his emergence into the third act of his career. He would be able to pair his brand with what he thought still mattered as the Lakers brand and say, we're going to build something not just for myself for these next 3 to 5 years, but also for the future to turn it around. Because let's remember, the Lakers have been collecting 50 lost seasons in a row like they were going out of style. And maybe, just maybe, I, like LeBron James, overvalued what the Lakers brand means in 2019. This is pointed out to me by one of our listeners on Twitter. You mean an organization that gave away $48.5 million to a guy off an Achilles tear because he's quote-unquote family might be a fucking dumpster fire? Hey, we're going to draft a point guard, then hire a taskmaster towards point guards, Byron Scott, as our head coach, who only got along with Chris Paul because quote-unquote Kobe likes him. Then, after firing said coach, you draft another point guard, then move the last point guard as a salary dump. Then you hire a guy as your point... president of basketball operations who has zero desire to manage and all he wants is to do is sign a superstar and fire another coach. Then the superstar you get circumvents the development of the small forward you drafted 3 years ago, the guy in Ingram who you immediately tried to cut his initial growth by signing a small forward to a 4-year $72 million contract and no one else is going to give him that much. Now Ball and Ingram are pissed. Kuzma doesn't care. Kubac is gone in a move that the Clippers made then laughed at you immediately after the transaction. But they try to make it all LeBron's fault. And I think that's kind of the crux of the matter, is that now that things have fallen apart in a very public manner, they want to make it LeBron's fault. Let's backtrack. Let's take everyone to how we got here and how they became such a large-scale embarrassment. Aside from that beautiful breakdown that I just read, let's look at what's happened here. This whole thing's gotten fucking embarrassing. We all agree they kind of had to fire Luke Walton, not only because of the downtrodden things that happened this year, because in the years he's been there, nothing has really shown you the desire or ability or need to retain him as a coach. He hasn't developed the young guys. He hasn't coalesced the older guys. He's really just keeping a seat warm. So you got him out of there. That made sense. But the way you got him out of there, the infighting, the Magic quitting on fucking national television, Jeannie Buss trashing Magic in emails and then leaking the emails to Magic and then having that story leaked to the media. It's embarrassing. You know what else is embarrassing? When you offer a championship coach in Tyronn Lue 3 years, $6 million. Basically, what you're telling Lue and the world is that we're going to weather the LeBron storm and come out the other side a new franchise. Well, Tyronn Lue decided that, hey, I've got a ring. I don't need to come here and play along so that you guys can feel like you're trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes. No, I'm not doing that. So they ended up with Frank Vogel, who took 3 years for $5 million a year. Now I know what you're saying. Well, that shows that they're dedicated to this three-year plan. Also shows you that Frank Vogel's fucking desperate. Because the Cavaliers just signed the Michigan coach, who's coached exactly 0 minutes of NBA basketball, to a five-year deal. And I know what you're thinking. Hey, maybe the Lakers can't afford it because maybe the Lakers aren't as rich as you think they are because maybe the Lakers are a mom-and-pop organization. We covered this last week when we talked about the Giants, these second-generation teams. What I need people to realize is that the Lakers have become not just a second-generation team run besotted upon by poor management and idiot children. Because remember, we thought that the little bus is the problem. We've now seen that Jeannie Buss in her six different camps helping her decide on a fucking coach, including an alumni camp, which presumably would include Magic, who just fucking quit. They land on Frank Vogel. They don't just land on Frank Vogel. They land on Frank Vogel. And they forced Jason Kidd as his lead assistant. Now, the Vogel thing, whatever. I don't think it's a good hire. He did fine in Indiana. Don't look at the Orlando years, apparently, because that's where he was developing young players. What the fuck are we talking about? If the tenet of your hire is to save money, and so my goal was always, I would say, look, just offer Lue the five at six and fire him in 3 years if you're not happy. But I'm thinking like a well-run organization. You've got to remember that this is a mom-and-pop shop where Pop died. Dr. Buss passed away, gave the company to his two idiot kids who have now run the motherfucker into the ground, including giving Kobe all that money after the Achilles thing. Saving money is not the way you run an NBA team. Cutting corners on coaches and scouts and, like, I don't know, someone to run the goddamn team isn't how you do things. Making your new head coach take on Jason Kidd, noted upward climbing snake. And I say that not lightly, because every place he's been, he is sniped for the job ahead of his. That's how he got the head coaching job. That's how he got all that power in Milwaukee. Hey, what happened to Milwaukee when they got rid of him and brought in, I don't know, actual real good fucking coach? The conference finals. It's me using Giannis. And I'll say this, the guys in Milwaukee, they do admit, they say that Jason Kidd did a good job of teaching them what it took to win. And that's good. And I think that the mentality that Kidd brings will be helpful, particularly in the young point guard for Lonzo Ball. But you can't invite a snake into your house and then get surprised when it bites someone. If I'm Frank Vogel, I'm patting down Jason Kidd before every meeting for a fucking wire. Because the ownership put him there. The ownership knows they want him to coach, but he's got too much shit in his back pocket. Too much shit in his closets. You know who else should have shit in their closets and doesn't seem ashamed of it? Kurt Rambis and fucking Phil Jackson, because they are two of the parties who apparently had big voices in this coaching search. And I know you're thinking, wait, didn't, yeah, well, yes, he did. Phil Jackson dated Jeannie Buss for a very long time, never married her. I'm sure her brother loved that. And then he and Kurt Rambis went on to destroy the New York Knickerbockers. Lakers fans, your second generation idiots are recycling other second generation idiots' mistakes. That's where we are. And not just Kurt Rambis, because apparently Linda Rambis is involved. And while I will disparage Kurt Rambis and Phil Jackson's front officing due to what happened in New York, maybe Linda Rambis is some fucking idiot savant on how to run an NBA team. I don't think. Immediately. Like yesterday immediately. This cannot be allowed to continue. They have fiduciary responsibility to the people around them. To the LA area. To the NB fucking A. Hey, the Lakers were out of the playoff hunt with 20 games left. What the fuck's the league going to do to sell that? LeBron James and the Lakers are donezo? LeBron James, who, I know, there's been a lot of salt, a lot of fucking hay made on, he maybe didn't have any more, it was down season. LeBron James went for 28-8-8 in one of his most efficient years in the last five on one leg for most of the season. The doctors come out and said, look, we told him not to play at all. We told him not to come back this year. And the Lakers are attempting to scapegoat him by offering these three-year deals and say, oh, this is what's hamstrung this franchise. Guys, Lakers, idiots, you could have used LeBron James to build the next era of Lakers stardom. He showed up because he believed in the mystique. If you'd have worked with him as opposed to developing this weird, unnecessary adversarial relationship with him, particularly as more and more comes out, like people are like, LeBron's running this team. Actually, Magic did a lot of that shit. Well, LeBron's calling the shots behind this. Well, he didn't know Magic was quitting. Well, LeBron's going to get the coach he wants. Frank fucking Vogel? So this myth of LeBron as like puppet master of the league and like Dr. Claw of the Lakers needs to kind of die. Because if I'm LeBron James and they're talking about trading me, I'm like, fuck it, let's go. This is fucking ridiculous. I came here because you presented yourself as a well-run organization that was planning for the future to be a mover and or shaker in the NBA. What I've found is a bunch of scared children trying to play in daddy's shoes. Sadly enough, Dr. Buss isn't walking through that door. And for the hopes of Lakers fans everywhere, and for the hopes of myself, for the next 3 years, tied to this albatross of a fucking franchise, I hope that something good happens. Not just for the Lakers, not for Lakers fans, but for LeBron fucking James. These have been great playoffs. Let me make that just one thing abundantly clear. I have enjoyed every second of these playoffs, even though my sleep schedule has not. But baby, you can't tell me something don't feel right without LeBron there. You can't tell me that. Jeannie is as dumb and over her head as her brother ever was. We just liked her more because we knew her better. It's over. It didn't work. The problem is not 23 in gold. It's pantsuits, it's empty suits, and it's useless motherfuckers who are surrounding that player with inadequate pieces to get things done. Let's talk about these playoffs. And let's start with a team that had the good sense to fire Jason Kidd last year. Like, how is this getting recycled? Anyway, the Bucks flushed the Celtics. And I'm going to talk about the Bucks probably more this coming weekend. Let's talk about the Celtics for a while because, like the Lakers, they hitched a lot of things on the emergence of a singular star. And unlike the Lakers, they got further than some people did. They made the fucking playoffs. They made the semifinals. They had a pretty good showing. But when you compare it even with last year's team that didn't have the stars in Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, it's almost impossible to call this season anything less than a disappointment. They got gentlemen swept by the Bucks in five games. And as you look around kind of Boston media and larger national media, Kyrie's the fall guy. Rightfully fucking so, first and foremost. He's the guy who said, I don't want to be a Robin, I want to be a Batman, which like, wait your turn, Dick Grayson grows up and gets the Bat-Cow. Anyway, and he said, I want my own team. So he went to Boston. He brought Gordon Hayward with him. Gordon Hayward's leg exploded and then Kyrie got hurt. So this team coalesced around that aspect of it, saying we got no one, no one believes us, like Boston 101 horse shit. And they made a run to the conference finals last year, an impressive run. What happened was Kyrie Irving came back, Gordon Hayward came back, and I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. The gravity of the team shifted. Because it went from Brad Stevens is this genius of X's and O's and maximizing talent to saying, oh, Kyrie's kind of the star here. And so is Gordon Hayward, because one of the things that got thrown off this year was the insertion of Gordon Hayward in the starting lineup. Me, myself, I would have put him on probably 10 minutes the first month, 12 the next, and slowly worked his way back into the the lineup, because it's not just that he's this transcendent talent, which Gordon Hayward is a very talented ball player. He's coming off of an injury where your confidence in what holds you up is shaken. That which is your base, that from which you shoot, you defend, you run, you pass, all of that, it's been shaken. And so you've got to allow the runway for him to get comfortable. You've also got to allow the runway for these young guys who stepped up last spring, whose last memories are being the go-to guys on an undermanned team against LeBron James, and say, time for you to readjust your expectations too, buddy. Because the minutes aren't going to be there. Terry Rozier's on ESPN this morning, roasting people. Roasting people. Way worse than I am. And he admits it himself. He says, look, Kyrie coming back, it was hard to adjust. You know, things changed as Kyrie's there. And that's fair. He's the best player. You kind of have to cater to him. But in catering to him, you also have to balance your responsibilities to the rest of the team. And that is one of the reasons why I was always hesitant to give Brad Stevens this best coach ever's award last year. The job isn't X's and O's largely in the NBA, particularly in the playoffs. In the playoffs, you saw it, we'll talk about it later, you saw it in the Raptors-Sixers series. Once you get to seven games, once you've played five games against someone, you know the other guy's sets. You know what they're going to run out of timeouts. You know what's coming. So the real paycheck you get as an NBA coach is the management of egos, the management of minutes and expectations, and the development of young players. I would argue this season, he did not manage Kyrie Irving coming back well at all. From the Kyrie side or the rest of the team side. He kept saying, we'll figure it out, and they never did. He handled the Gordon Hayward return insanely poorly. I told you how I would have staggered his minutes, worked him backwards in as opposed to starting him, having to pull him out of the starting lineup, and then every minute he plays after that, someone's looking at him sideways. And lastly, that's funny. Sorry, I should have funny text. And lastly, I would blame the lack of development of young players, because when those guys have shown the flashes of what you saw last year and the minutes they were afforded, it is the onus is on you, because now you know their ceiling. The onus is on you as a coach to say, your minutes are going to change. How do we maximize what we saw out there in the minutes you're going to get? How does every player not go into the offseason with a plan saying, this team's going to change? And maybe you're at the end of a contract, we're going to get you a new deal, and I know it's going to be frustrating, but we're going to keep all these things in consideration. No. His answer was, we will figure it out. And as we sit here on May 14th, I have as many games left to play this season as Kyrie Irving, exactly fucking zero, because they never figured it out. And I get it. You want to rush back Jordan Gordon Hayward because you wanted to have him for opening night. It's a good bop, a good buzz. It fulfills some weird New England power fantasy of seeing Gordon Hayward in the starting lineup. I fucking hate Boston. But I get why they did it. I think they should have gone away from it earlier. And I think they should have done it in the first fucking place. This boy wonder coach is looking quite funny in the light. Let's go next to Nuggets and Trailblazers. A series that did not go gentleman sweep. A series that did go seven, including the longest basketball game I've ever been awake for most of. Yeah, it's been brilliant. It was a brilliant series. And I was really taken aback at how good the Nuggets are. Because I was one of those people who thought they didn't have enough top-end talent. I knew depth-wise that they were a good team. I just thought that the top-end talent of the Denver Nuggets would not allow them to compete with the best teams in the West. I was fucking wrong. They were great. This is the beginning of their playoff, their championship window, I think. I think the most exciting part about the Western Conference this year has been evidence and proof that the gap between the Warriors and the rest of the conference is not as big as we thought, or as maybe the Warriors thought, I think. And that it's closing day by day. And you look at guys, you look at these young guys, you look at everything coming back for Denver. You look at Millsap, who was just lights out in the playoffs. Nikola Jokic. You look at everything that was going on here. I'm just really, really impressed. And I think that you cannot say how important that home court advantage can be for them, because I watched Dame Lillard suck wind at the last three games of the series. That altitude fucking matters. And I think that they can use that to really push something there. I think they've got a good coach, a good young core. And I think they could be something to be dealt with in the West in the future. Portland Trailblazers, before we get into how well they played in CJ McCollum's game 7 and how I do think that the Nuggets kind of wilted in the spotlight, fuck you, Rodney Hood. How the fuck dare you? Like, so last year in the playoffs, the Cavs were rolling on somebody and they said, I think it was Toronto actually. And the coach Lou went out and said, hey, Rodney, let's get you some burn, get you some minutes, get you the blood flowing. And he said, no, thank you. DNP, PD, player decision. And it's stuck weirdly with me since that happened. I know, you know, people are different situations, blah, blah, blah. I looked at him funny since then. And then watching what he did for the Trailblazers in this series, I'm like, where? LeBron James has to be sick. This is who Rodney Hood is? This? Rodney Hood is this? No one knew. I don't think Rodney Hood knew. Because he got hurt in that same 7. And he's questionable for the beginning game, a game 1 later tonight. But CJ brought it. And Dame's going to bring it. And we're going to cover this series in a few minutes. But I'll tell you right now, you cannot hide Steph against Dame Lillard. You cannot hide him against CJ. It's going to be very interesting to see defensively how these Warriors match up, particularly without Durant early on. Toronto, Philly, game 7. Look, man. Y'all can say what you want about Toronto, about Philly, about, you know, the process and all this shit. That was a hell of a basketball game. And I say that knowing that it wasn't. Because it wasn't. It was fine. It was fine. A little tight down the line. People missing open shots. People missing open layups. Kawhi Leonard taking more. I think he took more. He scored more points in this series than anyone has since Jordan. I think it was in let's see. I want to make sure to get the number right for you guys. He scored 243 points in the Eastern Conference semifinals, which is the most in the postseason series since Jordan scored 246 in the 1993 finals. In 6 games, because Jordan's a psychopath. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. And for 2 teams that I honestly think were playing to get gentlemen swept by the Bucks, yo, they brought it. I think the most telling stat is Joel Embiid on Sunday played 55 minutes. The Sixers won those minutes by 5. They played Greg Monroe for 2 minutes. He was minus 9. It's crazy to think that when Joel Embiid is on the court, even if he's not healthy, that's how much he affects this game. That's how much he affects the way they play. And it's probably the reason why Ben Simmons either needs to be out of there or the coach needs to be gone. The coach has proven, you know, I know he was the steward through the rebuild and steward through the hashtag process. But we've proven that, you know, Brett Brown may not be the man to figure out what the fuck going on next. Ben Simmons still can't shoot and he still hasn't found a way to make them play together. We saw flashes of it in game 6 and 7 when Jimmy Butler took the point. Sorry, Rod. Jimmy finna get paid. I know that's going to feed into your agenda somehow because you're just that good, but woo, Jimmy finna get paid. But at that point, the post gets too clogged with Ben Simmons and Embiid. And if one's got to go, it's not Embiid. We just covered the numbers. It's just not Embiid. It won't ever be Embiid. It can't be Embiid. But I think it's time to talk about it. The single greatest shot I've ever seen in my life. I was on my laptop watching the game because Susan had Game of Thrones on and I had my headphones on and I screamed. I screamed from my couch on a Sunday night because that shot was that shot, man. Yo, to put that arc on that ball, to have hit the rim 5 times and then drop, Kawhi called game, baby. And I feel kind of bad because 41 points in that game means the only person who showed up in that game was Kawhi Leonard. The first game Kyle Lowry shows up in this playoffs for is going to be the next game. This is a squad that I think, yeah, they made the conference finals, and yeah, they did so in a way that clearly demonstrated that Kawhi is central to their success. But these cats didn't want to shoot in the game 7. These are guys who are kind of shell-shocked from what's come before, and they've, fortunately for them, having a former NBA Finals MVP on their team who says, that weight, I got that weight. I don't want that weight, but I can carry it if I have to. And carry it he did. Will that be as effective against Giannis and the Bucks, who've got defenders to harass him in the post? Who's got defenders to take care of him on the wings? you roll two bodies at Kawhi, he's going to make the pass and make the smart pass. We learned that in the Philly series. What if these other cats can't shoot, man? Like, what if it's just the stage is too big, the lights are too bright? What if that's the problem? I think that's what we're going to see in the Eastern Conference Finals. I do want to mention Joel Embiid crying. And y'all know me. I'm not the dude who's going to be like, oh, the guy is soft because he cried. He's not soft because he cried. That's ridiculous. He's soft because he's a punk. Because all year, all last couple years, what's Embiid do on this podium? He stunks on fools. Calls people nobodies. Tells you just how good he is and how good you aren't. He talks shit about the Warriors this year. So if you wanted to use this opportunity to talk shit about Joel Embiid being kind of mentally weak in that moment, I can't begrudge you that. I'm not going to do it. But if you choose to because he's aggrieved you at some point in the past, fuck it. Fire off, baby. Get him. Get him. I'm here for the messiness. I'm not here for pretending that all tiers are created equal. When I lost, y'all know me. I'm a cocky motherfucker. I talk shit. I was worse than as a teenager. I was worse at wrestling that. Please believe that. So I've mentioned this on the podcast before. Every time I won a wrestling tournament, which, spoilers, was a lot of the fucking time, I would wait for everyone to get their medals on the medal stand, and then I would run. You can see it on any medal celebration that my father filmed. I run from off camera, jump and turn and lower my head so that when I land on the number one podium, I'm already bowed for my medal because I was a cocky bastard. I lost in the state finals my senior year to a kid I had beaten that summer in double overtime. I sprinted off that mat shaking hands and cried in private. You know why? Because crying doesn't make you weak, but doesn't make it... No one likes crying in public. No one likes crying in public. Last time I cried in public was... March? Mid-March? Yeah. And you don't like it. And it was in a situation where it was completely understandable. And I was not the only person in the situation crying. But you feel so out of control and so... Like, I don't know if it's just internalized masculinity, like toxic horse shit. That's just 33 years of being dipped in it. But I was so angry. I was like, why? Go tighten the fuck. Like, come on, man. Get it together. And... I'm not begrudging him for crying. It's an emotional moment. He's been fighting through illness and injury to be on the brink, to have his hand in the guy's face, playing the best defense he thinks he can, and the shot goes in. It's an emotional moment. I get it. The tears may flow, but if you want to use this as an opportunity to right some of what you've perceived as wrongs in the way that Embiid has comported himself around the league, well, not as much fun when the rabbit's got the gun, is it? Now, I bring you to the titular series. The title of this episode is Clutch No. As a shout out to everyone else who's watched those shitty State Farm commercials and hope never to see Oscar from The Office paired with James Harden and Chris Paul ever again. As a matter of fact, I never want to hear James Harden's name ever again. I don't want to hear about this team ever again. I don't want to hear about how they got screwed ever again because... They started something that I consider a real legitimate, inexcusable scourge upon the sports world. Most recently, the San Jose Sharks wanted an apology from the NHL for an on-call. For a controversial call, excuse me. In the second period of, In game three, basically, they missed an icing call. It was close enough, didn't call it, and they gave up a goal. Now, in case you're wondering, the Sharks won that fucking series. They still want an apology. And I would love for this to be the fault of the next person I'm going to bring up. The goddamn Saints. In case you've forgotten the happiest moment of my 2019, the Saints were, some would say, I wouldn't, robbed of a spot in the Super Bowl by a alleged missed call. I saw no flag. I heard no whistle. I saw no penalty. That's how my football gets down. What about you? But the Saints bitched and moaned and did so long enough and had like a fucking parade during the Super Bowl because they're that petty and small and have nothing else in their tiny, tiny New Orleans lives besides gumbo, mushmouth gumbo, and the fucking Saints. So they whine to the league, and now certain calls, including PI, are going to be reviewable, which I'm like, oh, we're going to review offensive PI. No, just defensive. Oh, okay, cool. You fucking cowards. But no, this entire trend gets kickstarted by the whiny, bitchy, oh, woe is me Rockets from last spring, when Chris Paul went down in game six, and all off fucking season, all we heard was, it wasn't the 27 missed threes in game seven, it was the fact that, damn it, we were robbed of our chance to compete fairly. Listener, I ask you, what's a more satisfying postseason collapse? Last year's game seven meltdown, where they couldn't hit a fucking shot and couldn't get anything done? Or was it this year, where the other team, the Warriors, mind you, not only lost their best player, possibly the best player on the planet, to what we thought was a snapped Achilles. Like, when he came down pointing at his leg, I was like, oh no. I had real, real fear right then. They lose him in the third quarter of a game that they were losing. The Warriors win that game. They come back for game six in Houston. And in Houston, with a full complement of whatever you've built there, Daryl Morey, you couldn't get it done against a Warriors team that, one, was missing the best player on the planet, and two, had Steph Curry score exactly zero motherfucking points in the first half. And you mean to tell me that I should consider this team a contender for anything beyond a laughable reaction from me in the future? Fuck and you. Chris Paul got older. The defense is going to get worse. You overpaid for Clint Capella, and he could not stay on the floor against the Warriors. For the team that you said you were building, for the Warrior beaters, you sure look like a bunch of fucking frauds to me. I am done pretending that this is a legitimate franchise, that what they built is legitimate, because they don't have cap room to do anything else. They're going to have to run back this team. And maybe, I'll say maybe, maybe they get back to this position again. And maybe they make it interesting as the Warriors for a quarter or a half or, God forbid, a couple games. Is there anyone within the reach of my voice who actually believes they can beat the Warriors? Because I'll tell you one group of people who definitely doesn't think that. The Warriors. They are unafraid. And that's why, throw dirt on them, fire everybody, kick them all out of the building. Daryl, whatever you've built there, it's insufficient and it doesn't work. Move on. Because next year is going to be fucking hilarious. Doing the same thing they did this year, only without the built-in excuse of everyone's hurt. It's just the fact that no one else can score. Eastern Conference Finals. I like the Bucks in five. They aren't playing a coach who gives up four shot clock violations in the last 12 minutes of a game seven. Nick Nurse isn't the best coach, but holy shit, Brett Brown's so much worse. And the scariest thing is, Coach Bud's great. This Bucks team, no one watched because it's Milwaukee, but they've been the best team wire to wire in the NBA this year. If they make the finals, and let's say the Warriors pull through, they've got home court advantage over the Warriors. Giannis has reached kind of that weird plateau where you're a little, where nothing's impossible, where whatever story you hear about his on-the-court exploits becomes immediately believable. And that's why I think they got him in five. I think that Kawhi leaves, and I think the Raptors tried their best. They just could. They thought the window opened when LeBron left the East, and holy shit, the emergence of Giannis closed that sumbitch quicker than you can imagine. In the Western Conference, hey, guess what? These Western Conference Finals, pretty fucking entertaining. You've got Dame Lillard's return home to Oakland. And Dame Lillard isn't the dude who, like, kind of from Oakland. Dame's super fucking Oakland. Super fucking Oakland. The Blazers pass on Kevin Durant in the draft to draft Greg Oden. Did not work out. You got Steph versus Seth, the battle of the light-skinned Currys, which is, I guess, all the Currys. So the battle of these two particular light-skinned Currys. You got Klay playing his dad's very first team he played on, Portland Trailblazers. Terry Stotts was a Golden State Warrior assistant. Yeah, that's 10 years ago. I don't know. That's a stretch. But my favorite ongoing subplot of this entire thing is if we all did you, don't worry about what happens at the top of the league in the most condescending horseshit ever, to the point where, like, if someone talks to me, like, on that on my podcast, they get cussed out on my podcast. CJ McCollum's a nicer guy than I am. Oh, come on, man. You don't really like that. Don't. Y'all got a nice little squad. I like the two of y'all, but don't worry about what happens at the top. Well, Kevin, you're on the sideline. And CJ McCollum carried his team to the top of this fucking league. I'm here for this series. This series can go 6-7. I think the Warriors get it in 5 or 7. I don't think they win in Portland. Just because I don't think Dame will let them. But I think that it's going to be interesting. Game one's going to be very telling because we know there's no Durant in game one. I want to see what they do with Dame as far as game plan wise, because if he's going into full attack mode, Steph Curry is showing a propensity to pick up some very stupid fucking fouls this postseason, and it could end up for bad times for the Warriors. I think they're just too talented to not pull it out, and eventually, particularly once they get KD back. But make no mistake, they're in for a fucking dogfight if they make it to the Bucks. If the Bucks go five with the Raps, and you've got hungry-ass Dame Lillard running at Steph Curry for seven games, we're going to have an NBA Finals on our hands that you will not forget anytime soon. There you guys have it. The best place for Zion to land is going to be Atlanta, but he's not going to land there, so don't worry about it. Yes, that's an elaborate reverse jinx that I admitted, so it probably won't work, but it was never going to work in the first place because Atlanta. I've got tonight in game one. Give me the Blazers, baby. Give me those Trailblazers. Build that lead until Kevin Durant comes back and ruins everything. And Bucks, look, the Raptors are going to get one. It won't be the first one. And if it is, we saw what happened to the motherfucking Celtics. They flushed those cowards like it was nothing to be done. That was your show. This is your outro. See you guys next week.